All right, so first, who are we? My name is Mark. I founded a company called TubeFilter, which is kind of like a daily blog about the online video industry. And also work now at Chill, which is a new social video curation platform, taking video from all over the web, figuring out what your friends are watching, and hopefully sourcing and discovering the most relevant and interesting videos for you. Nitsam, we will get into what some of his claims to fame, but he founded a blog called The Daily What, and is now part of Cheeseburger Networks, and is one of the most influential blogs in online video. He's essentially launched memes, and not only that, has launched some of the most successful videos of all time, including the number one most successful or most viewed video last year on YouTube, Rebecca Black's Friday.
So, sorry about that.
Yeah, he owes her a lot. Okay, moving on. Here's our overview of our conversation today. Again, this is a conversation about curation, but it's a conversation about online video curation. So we're going to look at sort of how big this problem really is. It is a problem of massive, massive quantities of video getting larger every single day uploaded to the internet. So it means somehow finding signal in that noise is a very difficult problem. Such a big problem that we need machines just to really leverage all of that content. So we'll look at the sort of case for machines, how YouTube and other sites are building building video recommendation algorithms. And then we'll make the case for humans. How are humans really the answer, and how they're really finding the best stuff that goes popular? And we'll look at some of alternate models. What else is next? And really then open it up into a discussion of what you guys want to know about human and machine curation. So, all right, first, we have to ask why curation. I think this is a word that gets thrown around so much, and you're probably hearing it like in every single session at South By this year. And specifically in video, I like this quote from Eric Schmidt when he was CEO of Google. He said there were 5 exabytes of information created between the dawn of civilization and 2003, through 2003. But that much information is now created every 2 days, and the pace is increasing. So what is all this data? A lot and much more and more of it is becoming video. Just last year, I think the number everyone was quoting is 48 hours. Now it is 60 hours of video are uploaded to YouTube every single minute. That's 3,600 minutes of video, which if we do a rough back of the napkin math, if we say there's 3 minutes per video, that's 1,200 videos per minute. Impossible for anyone to watch all of them. I found this stat: more video is uploaded to YouTube every month than has been broadcast by the big 3 TV networks in the past 60 years. Unbelievable. This is so big that YouTube has actually made a whole site just to start visualizing and quantifying this problem.
People around the world are uploading a lot of video. Every second, 1 hour of video is uploaded to YouTube. That's 24 hours of video every 24 seconds. Or 9 months every 2 hours. A decade every single day. That means every 10 days, a century of video is uploaded to YouTube. Can you imagine how many yens that is? Discover more time-bending stats at 1hourpersecond.com.
I don't know if that was made in like the 10% time at Google, but it was a really cool site. And so check it out if you're interested in seeing more visualizations. And really, I just want to focus a little bit on sort of the history of entertainment. This is pretty obvious when you think about it, but it really is sort of frames our discussion today. We're moving from a very programmed entertainment experience to a curated one. Obviously, back in the day, when I was born, there were only 3 major television networks, and they dictated all of what people watched. We, of course, made home movies. We shared that within our own families, but there was never any major platform to distribute that. So really, content, if it existed on a mass scale, was greenlit, in the US particularly, by about 3 different programming heads. And of course, now we're moving to a curated experience. If we break down curation and video, it basically falls under 3 categories. Editorial, that's sites like Nitsam's, The Daily What, The Huffington Post, other blogs and sites that we read. To more algorithmic curation, really trying to recommend in a mass way via YouTube and also search algorithms. And then really what our friends are sharing with us, which is becoming, I think, more and more important this year because most video sharing is actually happening through the social graph, and that's on Facebook and Twitter, and a shameless plug for Chill. All right, so let's make the case for machines. Humans, there are even 800 million people who come to YouTube every month cannot reasonably watch and vet all of the massive quantity of videos uploaded to YouTube every day. So humans need help. Obviously, computers can crunch massive quantities of data, and they can do this in incredibly short periods of time. And unlike humans, they're getting cheaper and they're getting faster. Okay, so let's meet Al. He's been nicknamed Al for fun, but really there's actually many different video algorithms at YouTube. Most fall under search and recommendation. YouTube, of course, is a massive search engine. It does over 1 billion search queries a day, making it the world's second largest search engine. But YouTube realizes they have a problem. Most people who show up to YouTube have something they call unarticulated want. That is, they know they want to be entertained, but they don't quite know what to search for. So they might search for a cat video, but they may really just want to see something else, a kid jumping off a roof that's really funny. That's really what the core of why they have a video recommendation engine, to solve that want and keep the user entertained, and more importantly, keep them on site. So breaking down the data sources that go into this recommendation algorithm, you've got content data. Now, computers cannot possibly at this point understand and parse human language the same way humans can. So they've got to do as much inferring about the context of that video by looking at things externally around the video. And of course, that's raw video streams or view counts, the video metadata, so all of the tagging that the uploader did, the title and the description, trying to infer what that video is actually about. And then it takes a look at two different types of user activity data. There's explicit user activity data and implicit user activity. On the explicit side, this is when we rate a video and we say, yes, I like this video, maybe we favorite it, or we subscribe to the uploader who actually uploaded it. The implicit user activity data, this is actually what we sort of forget that they're recording, how long we actually watched it. This is, in fact, if we stay on a video for a certain period of time, it depends on the actual length of that video, but if it triggers past a certain proportion of the video, they call that a long watch, and that means it's a signal to YouTube's Al that, okay, we probably liked something in that video. And so when you combine all this together, it makes recommendations. This was the recommendations from yesterday for me. It's a lot of Shay Carl videos. For me, I guess I watch a lot of YouTube, but apparently they think I want to watch Shay Carl. There's some Kasim G in here. The algorithm is supposed to show you videos you've never seen before, and I know I've seen the Honda video with Ferris Bueller at least 4 times. So maybe I watched it off-site, or they just didn't quite record that. They've got my friend's web series on there, which is a relatively unknown video, so I guess it's reminding me that I should check out that series. But I would give this kind of a B+ or a B- in terms of utility for me. Now, if we really break it down, this is outside of the scope of the discussion, but there's a lot of complicated math that goes into these algorithms. This is just 3 versions of what's called the adsorption algorithm, which is part of how they are actually finding which videos to recommend to you. The only interesting thing is that it's doing this thing, it's doing co-view data. It's looking at if I liked a video, and then Neetsam also liked that video, but I also like this other video, it can imply that maybe Neetsam is gonna like that video as well. And it's doing massive quantities of analysis like that with some pretty interesting equations. So there's plenty of research actually published to academic journals worth checking out. If you look in the ACM journal, it's pretty interesting. But the conclusions from all this is they found that it does work. Recommended videos account for about 60% of all clicks on the homepage of YouTube. And if you compare that to some of the other filters that they've got, like most viewed, top favorited, and top rated, these recommended videos are performing in terms of click-through rate about 200% better. Again, this is from research that was published within about 1 year ago, so this is always going to be changing. But still, it's proving that at least it's working on keeping you on site and showing you something you're more likely to click. But there are problems. Machine learning, of course, has limits. So YouTube is realizing this and saying, can we leverage a little bit more human intelligence? And they're experimenting with things like YouTube's Comedy Slam, which is actually pairing two videos against each other of similar format and similar length. And they're trying to learn comedy from humans, because right now, they just don't have a sense of humor. So far in Comedy Slam, they've had about 1 million votes on about 1,000 video pairs. And so not only are they learning which video is funnier, they're trying to match for patterns within those videos. So they're looking at audio sampling to see if you can hear audible laughter within those videos. They're also doing text-based analysis of the comments. So if they see a lot of lols or ha-ha-ha or other variations in different cultures, like he-he-he and da-da-da. So they're trying to learn. They're trying to see what makes us laugh. But so far, it's just experimenting. So therefore, we gotta take the other side of this debate. We gotta make the case for humans. So despite all of this awesome computer power and the troves of data, machines just don't have a sense of humor. And humans know humans best. Predicting what is universally funny is so hard that it's really at the edge of artificial intelligence. And it's a branch of artificial intelligence that they call AI complete, which I think really means that if we figure this out, artificial intelligence is now complete, and the computers have won. So I want to, two people have sort of inspired me to look at more about curation. And there's the first one's Christopher Penn. He has a nice quote here. I'll just read it. Our response to this tidal wave of data has been to turn to aggregators and curators, people and organizations that can filter, interpret, highlight, and suppress selected parts of the data wave for us so that we can get something useful out of it. And then Steve Rosenbaum, who's also speaking at South By, he's the author of Curation Nation and founder of Magnify.net. He said that as the web gets noisier, the signal-to-noise ratio gets harder for technology to solve without a final analysis by a human. So I want you all to remember what day it is today.
It's Friday, Friday, gotta get down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward to the weekend, weekend. Friday, Friday, getting down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward to the weekend. Partying, 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 partying. Fun, 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 looking forward to the weekend.
Okay, so I spared you, I gave you about like, what is that, 15 seconds of it? It could have been a lot worse. All right, so really, we want to look at what did Nitzan know? This video was posted February 10th, 2011. This was just over a year ago. But it sat basically dormant, like pretty much every video that I upload. And with almost nobody except probably her immediate family watching it for about 29 days. And then, on March 11th, 2011, right during South By last year, Nitzan uploaded, or he embedded the video on his blog, The Daily What. From there, that same day, it was picked up and reblogged by Tosh.0 or Less, Huffington Post, spread rapidly through Twitter, Tumblr, and all kinds of different discussion boards. And 3 days later, Rebecca Black was the top trending topic on Twitter. So, by the way, I love your headline here. You said, "Where is your God now of the day?" And I am no longer looking forward to the weekend. So the question is, what did Nitzan know? And we're going to get into this with a real discussion about what, you know, whether he even had any idea that this was about to take off and go as far as it did. And really, what was it in this video that triggered him to act on it? Just a little more data about this. This was the fastest video on YouTube to reach 100 million views. It took Justin Bieber's video "Baby" 2 months and 8 days. This is a chart. This is Kevin Alaka. He runs the YouTube Trends blog at YouTube. Really interesting stuff. So if you're into like number crunching of YouTube videos, I would definitely check that out. So he pulled this chart comparing the red there is Justin Bieber's "Baby," and that's the daily view count. And then you can see Rebecca Black's "Friday," and all of those spikes, of course, happened on Fridays. Not a shocker. All right, so a quick, and then I'll just sort of look at, this is just a step ahead. This is looking at Chill. This is just what we're building. We launched about a month and a half ago, but we're trying to take social cues, what our friends are sharing, and then source those videos to the top. Basically on the thesis that we are most influenced by those who know us best immediately within our social graph. That influences what movies we watch, what TV shows we watch. So we're trying to do the same thing with online video content. And in my world, for whatever reason, this hippopotamus was my friends thought I would love the best. I know Nitsan just loves this video.
Wow, look how crazy. Oh my gosh, there he comes.
It was just another day at the zoo. Little do we know. All right, so let's really have a discussion. This is where I'm going to open this up to a discussion. I'll use these questions as sort of a guide. But I'll start with the first one. Why? Actually, let's even step back to Rebecca Black. So what happened with that video? How did you find it, and did you have any idea what was about to happen?
I don't think anybody could have anticipated that the end result of that video. That was just something else. I initially had ignored it. I received it through the submission page on the website, and I believe the submitter had used a description along the lines of "makes Justin Bieber look like Shakespeare" or something along those lines. And I didn't really think much of it. I just thought this is someone who probably made a very awful music video, and there's so many of those types of videos out there. How could this possibly be any worse? And then I clicked play. It was the worst thing I had ever seen, and I'd been doing that for about 2 years at that point. I'd never seen anything that awful. It was just a phenomenon from the very beginning, and my first thought was, just blankly, I had to post it because it just, it was just awful, pure evil type of awful. And the thing that, maybe jumping ahead a little bit, but as far as computers go, the one thing that they can't really anticipate, or the one thing that they aren't designed to do really is, is to prank people, to troll them, basically. And that's sort of what I was going for, is to say, I suffered through this, now you're going to suffer through this. That was essentially, I'd say about 70% of the reason for posting that video. A computer's never going to do that. It's never going to be mean. And I think there is that aspect to internet, to video curation. Sometimes you just post videos to shock your friends or to get a rise out of them. That's a major part of that. And I can't imagine a world where we get so far as to have troll computers, or at least I hope we never get to that point.
Taking a more general approach to that, you probably watch more video on a daily basis than almost anybody, certainly in the professional sphere, doing it for a living. What is it? What are you looking for, and why is it? What are the characteristics that make a video go viral, or also referred to as highly social, and then there's others that don't?
There's so many different factors. I usually try to take it on a video-by-video basis. I take a video, I really look at it. I try to break it down and think, what does this video have that sets it apart from previous videos, even within a category of videos? Does this video stand out in any way, or is it just another sort of part of the heap of videos that people come across on their daily basis? Is there anything that makes it stand out that would give it that quality that is viral? To define exactly what that is, you would need to speak in more specific terms on what you're looking at. If you're looking at an animal video, for example, or a cute animal video, everybody has, you know, most everybody has an animal at home, a pet of some sort that they are positive is the cutest pet who ever lived. And they're constantly following it around with, you know, their smartphones, recording their every move and post and uploading it online. And I think that's part of the noise that's going on in on YouTube is just everybody's uploading everything. It's so easy to just do that, not even think about it. But there is a there is something that makes one animal video stand out from the others, and the reason why we gravitate towards some animal videos and ignore others. And it really comes down to something that speaks to us on a more general term, not as necessarily pet owners. I'm allergic to cats myself, but I love cat videos. I would never go anywhere near a cat, but there is something in a cat video or a good cat video that makes me want to post it. And I think it has something to do with does this transcend an animal video? Does this transcend a cat video? And also the aspect of, can I take something and build on this? Is there a phenomenon here? If it's some sort of a cat video that the cat is exhibiting some sort of odd behavior of some sort, that, for instance, to me says there's more here that we can build on this. You know, maybe we can add some funny music to it or something along those lines. That's just one example, but it really is looking at each video individually and saying, what is special about this video? Some of it is intuition, but a lot of it is also history, knowing what has worked in the past, and also, to a certain extent, knowing what plays. Seeing a video go around different sites that are considered tastemakers or trend makers, that to me says that maybe if I missed it, but there is a spark there. There's something that we can go off of. There's something that is making people gravitate. I don't always have to understand it immediately, but posting it brings me a step closer to understanding it next time.
Hmm. So you're constantly learning, and you're constantly you're the combined of every video, every test you effectively has done. Makes you even better for the next one.
Yeah, it's essentially like the computer, except I inject a human component by being able to look at it, in a certain way that only a human can. Is this relatable to other humans? I think a computer would only be guessing, even if it was really, really good at what it did. It would still be basing it on what it thinks that a human might want to enjoy, rather than what it enjoys itself. And a lot of what goes into my videos is, do I enjoy this video? And that's the first step. If I enjoy it, there's got to be something. I mean, historically, I've learned that more often than not, things that I tend to enjoy are things that other people enjoy as well. So that right there is my first step. Did I enjoy this video? If I didn't, then there's something missing here. I can do better. But if I did enjoy it, then I take a look, why did I enjoy it? Can I learn from this? And posting it allows me to receive feedback that then I use to improve my curation abilities for next time.
And you, maybe it's not explicitly written out, but you have a little bit of an algorithm yourself. You don't want to be the last person to the joke. So you have a view count threshold that you, like, you won't post a video if it's over a certain number of views?
I usually try to set the threshold at around 30,000. But obviously, my ultimate goal is to be there right at the beginning, at the 51 count, right before anybody knows about it. And that's why a lot of it depends also on submissions from people. So some of it is sort of like a computer, is receiving, you know, hundreds of submissions a day and then weeding through those submissions to find the cream of the crop. And being able to determine what really stands out over the bucket loads of submissions that I receive. And I think, for the most part, people out there know what they like, and they share that with me. Just the act of sharing it, just the act of taking the time to send me something that you've come to the conclusion is worth posting on a website that has such an extensive reach, that already means that there's something to this video. So I do take the time to watch it and learn from it.
I think that's an interesting point. It's not that, like, you actually can make something even more relevant, and your audience is a particular type who's willing to engage in mashups and remakes around memes. In some ways, you can just the act of posting on your blog, then, of course, makes it more social or makes it have a lift that otherwise wouldn't have had.
That's a huge component of it. Not just in the video itself, and again, this goes back to computers, and where they fail, at least at this stage, is not being able to anticipate human creativity. What happens beyond the point of a video getting posted online? So it gets posted to YouTube, and then it gets picked up by a website that deals in curation. But what happens at that point? It doesn't get sucked into a vacuum. If I've taken the time to post something, and I know this for other similar sites, the intention is to have the person take that video and move it forward in some way, and to express their creativity through that video. So if it means taking that video and adding value to it somehow through remixing it, through adding or turning it into an animation, there's so many different things, and we've seen that. And I think that really gets to the bottom of what's so great about the internet, is just taking a seed of an idea and really allowing it to grow and blossom into something that, you know, is so far removed from what it initially was.
Do you want to take a look at ONG Cat?
Let's go ahead.
Illustration. So is there context to this video?
It's just a cat with lockjaw. There's not much more to... But right there in the laughter, I think, is the point.
So what is it? What is it about this video opposed to, you know, the numerous other cat videos of low quality that you get?
It's really, you know, there really is something. Again, it goes back to computers. Can a computer look at this video of just a cat, a diseased cat at that, and know that this is going to make humans laugh? Probably not. You would need that human factor to ascribe humor to it. And I think, you know, anybody looking at this immediately anthropomorphizes the cat as expressing surprise, shock at some sort. There is so much that can be done with this video. There's so much.
We did pull one of these. OMG Cat meets Dramatic Lemur. So that video came out the exact same day that the first one was posted.
It's that sort of thing that somebody sees something like a cat that, you know, you think to yourself, well, you know, I sort of feel bad maybe a little bit for the cat, but at the same time, it's just so funny, and there's so much material to work with. It's just so hard to pass up, especially when there's that... you know, there's that prize that's waiting for you, which is that recognition for having contributed something and having added something to the culture, and having people, you know, give you that feedback of saying, way to go, good job. And I think that is something that a computer can't anticipate.
It's coming back to... Oops. No, we're not going to that. Going back to that one. Can you tell us just a little bit about your process? I think it's a question that a few people might have. Because one thing is, you are in many ways a super node, which is what great curators become, one that introduces and socializes a video to a mass audience very rapidly. You get pitched, I assume, all the time. Is there a process and a way that gets done and that you sort of pick out the scraps and are the things that we shouldn't be doing?
Yeah, that's a good question. I get pitched a lot. I would say 90% of my inbox is pitches from PR companies, from companies that are involved in consulting larger clients on how to spread their message and so forth. And If I get straight pitched, as in it's just a PR company, it's a guy, he's being very straightforward about it, I'll immediately delete the email. I won't even give it a second look. If they're trying a little bit harder by masking it somehow, by suggesting it in another way, or being creative in their copy, I may look at it if it has something that is of interest to me, or if it does introduce the content in a way that I think would be interesting to the readers, then I'll give it a glance. But more often than not, I'll probably discard it after that. It has to have something so unique, something that is really difficult to put into words. When you have something like Old Spice, which goes viral in almost an organic fashion, it's really amazing because it's an ad. There's no two ways about it. It's an ad for a product that's being shared around as if it's just another funny video, and it makes you wonder what really helps that video stand out. Why would people want to spread an ad around for free, basically doing a company's job for them? And I think there is something to maybe trying a little bit harder to get to people and not just trying to think what they might want, but really being unique and being, being amusing in a way that's not pandering. I think, a lot of companies have fallen into that trap of seeing Old Spice and then trying to mimic that by being quirky on purpose. And good curators can see right through that. And I've gone out of my way not to post videos that I see as sort of trying to game the system. But then you have people like Rhett and Link, who created the Chuck Testa video, who are really, really good at what they do. And they really know how to boil down a viral video to its essence and use that to create advertising for companies. And they just do an amazing job. So there really is no one way to go about it. But I would say, if you are trying to get a message across, do it on your own terms, but don't do it in a way that you think would work for a site like The Daily What on purpose. Try to find a way to get the message or to be interesting or be funny, be unique, but don't try to do it on purpose because it's fairly easy to see through that.
And what you're pretty upstream in the curation game. There's a lot of downstream curation that sort of picks up the viral video of the day. Like it's not even at that, it's just sort of reporting news. And there are a lot of media outlets that do that. What motivates you particularly? I know we touched on this before, you want to be early. Are there any other things that sort of motivate you to get up in the morning?
For me, it's always been, from day one, it's always been about really what the internet for me has been about since I first logged on in 1995. And back then, I remember I logged on for the first time with my 2400 baud modem and I didn't know where to go. There was nowhere to go, basically. And there were no sites. I mean, there were no search engines, that had any name recognition. And you really didn't know which sites you were supposed to visit for anything cool or anything interesting. And that's where where curation started is, basically just being out there in the wilderness and finding things that are interesting and then taking those things and sharing them with people so that you have something to talk about. You find something, you think it's interesting, you share it, you have a conversation, and maybe that conversation grows into something larger, maybe it becomes a trend and evolves that way. And for me, that's still that today. Even though the internet is obviously huge and there are a lot of people out there jostling for attention, for me, it's always been about me in front of the computer looking at interesting, cool things and posting them so maybe other people would find them interesting as well.
Do you ever get it wrong?
Oh, yeah, but that's the beauty of the internet. I mean, you post something 20 minutes later, nobody even remembers that you posted it. The internet has such a short attention span, and getting something wrong doesn't mean anything when it's so easy to just post something else and move on. There really is no wrong. And that's why I say it's basically about me thinking that something is interesting and then posting it, and obviously giving some thought to why something is interesting and try to really have a conversation with the audience and have a conversation with readers and create a conversation, because I think that is that's the best part of the internet, is being able to come together around a trend, and everybody sort of is in on this in-joke, right, that we sort of share as having our little internet culture, and then we go out into, you know, the world, and then nobody gets our jokes, and there's that feeling that I think we all enjoy on some level, and that's really what it's been about for me. So I don't think there's really right or wrong on the internet. Sometimes things don't necessarily go as viral as some other things, but they might still get their day in the sun.
Gotcha. I do want to have this be an open discussion about curation, about us effectively, you know, how I want to take this how you guys want it as well. So if you guys have questions, please jump up to a microphone and we'll do it that way. If not, we will continue our fine discussion here. We were going to do a little bit of like an experiment, but we realized the actual logistics of doing an academic experiment in this time frame would have been actually incredibly challenging. So hence off, we are having a more of an academic debate over this. So it sounds like you basically are not so bullish on the rise of machines. Do you think it'll ever reach a point where your job can be replaced? It can identify enough signals early on and put the right videos on the blog at the right time.
It's hard for me to believe with the existing technology that something like that would happen in the foreseeable future, just because of the fact that I do think humans would find it difficult to relate to content that is so antiseptic in that way, where it's just been handpicked by a computer. It doesn't have that human element to it, I think, that is really essential for a video to go viral. But if a computer learns why people find certain things funny or shocking or interesting, then certainly it could, but then it would just be a human at that point.
Go ahead.
Hey, Neeson. So I was just really interested in I suppose, numbers. And you said there's no right or wrong on kind of in what you do. Just roughly, how many videos do you kind of post a day? Therefore, how many do you kind of post a year? And how many, like, do you think you kind of get right, like the Rebecca Black kind of stuff?
I post whatever the internet sends my way. So in that way, I'm very reactive. I don't force anything, and that's very important to me for things to develop organically. I want them to develop organically because I think the best memes, the best trends are formed organically, where people just sort of suddenly come together around something that we find funny together at the same time, and then that thing explodes. And I think when it's forced, people tend to realize fairly quickly, and then it sort of dies down. And that's why the things that develop organically have more staying power, like Friday. I would say I post somewhere in the order of 10 to 15 videos a day. And in terms of on a daily basis, how I measure that is whether it elicited reactions from people in the comment section, whether it was shared on Facebook, whether it was shared on Twitter, whether it was reblogged on Tumblr, various metrics that tell me whether something did well or not. But it doesn't tell me whether that thing is destined to have staying power until I see that first remix. That's when I know that something has hit a vein, and that's when I know that there's potential for more there, and that doesn't happen very often. People are very selective because they don't have a lot of time. They're very busy. Obviously, they're not like me sitting around watching videos all day. They're very selective. So when they see something and that thing pops out, and they say, "I have to add some dramatic music to that," that immediately to me means I have to focus on this because now it's probably on its way up.
And sorry, and not to bang on about numbers, but...
Yeah.
So Rebecca Black's a great example, kind of year on, brilliant. I just roughly, like, how, like, I don't know, I like... You must have like a win chart. I mean, you probably don't have a win chart, but yeah. You must have a sense of like, I know, great victories for the last year. If you like to do your whatever.
Oh, how many videos had that sort of success?
Obviously not that big, but yeah. Like kind of relative. I mean, yeah. One a month or one a week or.
Yeah, I would say I would limit it to one a month because the on this order of magnitude, something like Rebecca Black, which didn't just spawn success for her and for that video, but really helped her label, Arc Music, take off and then spawned additional child sort of singers, quote unquote, and additional videos that spawned from that. That was just a thing in and itself. And I think that's something that comes along very rarely on the internet. Usually, if something does well, it'll have a staying power of maybe about a week or two. But for something to have staying power of several months, if not a year on, and really enter into the catalog of successful memes, that happens maybe twice a year, I would say, at the most.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Steve Garfield.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
You guys are both from Boston.
Oh, nice. We need to meet up. So I wanted to let you know that Kittens will be live streaming all day at hellogiggles.com. I just saw this, and you could jump on it now because there's 1,051 people watching the live stream and 8,500 people total views. And I just saw this, and I'm like, it's pretty amusing.
That's a fair question. Do you ever post a live stream of anything?
I just posted a live stream 2 days ago of Penguin Cam that San Diego SeaWorld launched to promote Discovery Channel's nature show Frozen Planet. That right there is a great example of a company that gets it right. Because who doesn't want to stop working on spreadsheets to look at penguins, waddling around an enclosure. I mean, that's the perfect time to spend 5 minutes, 15 minutes, a whole day, as far as I'm concerned. And there were plenty of examples of this sort of thing to indicate that something like that would work. There was the famous eagle cam, watching the eagles, watching the nest to see the egg, and people tuned in for days to watch that because they wanted to see the moment that the eagle emerged.
The Shibu puppy cam?
Right, the infamous puppy cam. And that sort of thing is just an evergreen. It's always people are always going to want to watch a live cam. There was the polar bear in Denmark the other day as well that I also posted. That's just great. That's always going to be great. If you want to install, a cam for your own pet at home, you're going places. I mean, that right there is viral destiny.
Interesting. Okay. So I mean, but you don't see as much mashups of the live streaming.
No, you don't see as much. That sort of is a thing in itself. I would say it's self-contained in a way, and it does go away fairly quickly. But in the time that it does get out there and that people start tuning in, it can explode, and you can basically do whatever it is you intended to do with that camera in a very short amount of time.
Cool. Hello.
Oh, we got the back. Let's go back.
We're in the back. Hey, I'm Paul. I have two questions. One is, are there some things that you passed on, or I guess, what are a few things that you passed on that subsequently went on to great acclaim, and what were your thoughts about that? And then I have another question. It's kind of a left field question, and do you feel that YouTube view counts accurately reflect how many people are actually watching it? Are watching these videos? Like, do you think YouTube reports, their view counts accurately? That's it. Thanks.
I can do the first one.
Yeah, I'll take the second one.
Okay.
It's a hot topic.
Not to toot my own horn, but there has never been anything like that. I have skipped on occasion on smaller nuggets of the internet that have gone viral to a limited extent, but anything on a large scale, like the Double Rainbow Guy or Nyan Cat or any of those really large scale memes that I was referring to earlier, there has never been a single one.
When did you pick them up, though? I mean, so sometimes you're not the first to pick it up.
Of course,
obviously.
Right.
But what about like a Justin Bieber there's got to be some things that you're like, well.
Yeah.
I guess I'm talking about ones that are straight, not straight promoted anyway, so.
Yeah, as far as, Justin Bieber, if you're referring to his earlier stuff, the original, your initial stuff that he was doing on YouTube, yeah, I wasn't on board with that just because that's not really my milieu, and I don't think it is my demographics either, but as far as things that are going viral in a very large way, you can see that because it tends to happen fairly quickly. I mean, it's very interesting to see when, especially when you're staying at the computer all day, not someone who's coming in from the outside and you know, is gainfully employed and has other things to do, but really when you're staring at the computer all day and looking at Twitter and looking at Facebook and so forth, you can really see the expansion of a video that's going viral in a very short amount of time. Because as I said, people pick up on this stuff fairly quickly. It's something that people gather around fairly quickly because it has that je ne sais quoi that people gravitate towards. And it's hard to put into words, but there is something to it. And when you see it, you know it. And not just for me, as speaking as a curator, but for everybody who sees it. And that's the reason it goes viral in the first place.
To answer your second question, it's been a hot topic, particularly on TubeFilter has been covering this. And it's just generally in the world of YouTube, it's controversial, the view counts themselves, because so many marketers have started paying to juice views. There are now a number of agencies where you can go take your video and get a million views. So I always look for external signals around the view count where things don't quite add up. If the likes is only, if he only has like 10 likes and has a million views, there's something way out of whack there. It should have, I don't know what the real thing, but if it's a million views, I think it needs close to 10,000 likes, probably more at this point. And comments, it needs several thousand comments at that point. And usually those are much harder to fake. So I think those are the signals. And like we looked at in terms of explicit user activity data that drives the YouTube recommendation algorithm, that is what I think they're weighting more. They actually said in one of the research reports that view counts is actually it's a weaker signal to them, and that's why they have that long watch count. They don't publicize it. It'd be great to publish that. But for a user experience reasons and other reasons, they just publish that single view count. So I don't know, maybe we'll see a separate, we'll have paid views plus organic views and have those separated out. I think the general consumer would be like, what the heck is this? But I think to the industry, it would give us a better understanding of what's a really social video and what was actually faked. So, let's go up here.
How's it going? I'm Brandon, I'm a video creator, and a lot of my clients are agencies and things like that. So what's interesting to me is you kind of wield a lot of power, I think. Like, you have the ability to make something explode, and there's a lot of value in that. Like, Rebecca Black, her whole career was created, you know, essentially by you. So my question is, do you recognize that, and like, can you, do you have, how do you, like, kind of benefit from that? And maybe do you have plans in the future to even benefit more? Because you're kind of like, you could almost be like a kingmaker or something. But if somebody else gets all the benefit, what do you get out of it, you know?
Yeah, she never thanked me for that that promotion. I waited for it and waited for it, and never came. Yeah, it's something with great power comes great responsibility, and I do take that seriously. And that's part of the reason why I won't just post anything that comes along. I'm very, very, very selective. And though I post a lot, it's a smidgen compared to what I actually receive during the day and from PR companies and just from readers. And there are multiple ways to submit content. And I do concern myself with that. And that's why when I do end up posting something, it is absolutely 100% worth posting. I've never posted anything that I don't back and can back if I need to. And I try to shy away from posting advertising, not just because obviously, posting advertising for free is not something I want to get into the habit of doing, but also because my readers will see right through that. And then I lose their respect, and then I lose credibility in turn. So they rely on me to be selective in that way, and I don't want to let them down. And I have posted things before, ads that were clearly ads, that I did not get paid to post, and readers did not respond kindly to that. Mm. So that really taught me that it takes something extra to get people on board with quote unquote viral ads, more than just having a quirky video or based on videos that have historically proven successful. But as I said, one wrong turn and I basically lose it all. So that's why I take it very seriously.
Let's go to the back.
Hello. Jean-Yves from France. Sorry for my accent. You speak about the AL versus MAN algorithm. So when you talk about semantic, you have more context. And with semantics, you have also reasoning. And the reasoning can be made by a human. So it can be a mix between machine and human. What do you think of that, about the semantics? Will it improve viral video and viral recommendation?
You're talking about semantic learning and between humans and machines?
Yes, or? Yes. Yes, yeah. I know. I talk about semantics like for algorithmic, mm-hmm. and that you could put more context in the video recommendation. And also that with semantics, you need to have reasoning. And the reasoning is done by machine, but it has to be helped by a man, of course. So it could be mix machine and man better, maybe.
I mean, in the research I found in preparing for this, that it absolutely is where it's going to go. I think that there is no, I've not, I looked for all kinds of different, in terms of purely computer and machine-driven algorithms, and tested them out. There's a whole bunch of startups attacking this, especially with movie recommendation. And then there's a whole lot trying to do really a mix of adding then your sort of human element into it, and also sort of, you know, adding that sort of upvote system with very, very detailed, you know, semantic data about them. I've never seen it nailed, but I think that's how it's going to be done. We still need that one. We still have to quantify that. And then maybe it's an upvote, maybe it's a like, but it's, we need that human vote to then just to give one more signal. And it's that sort of probably the magic signal of humans. But yeah, I think absolutely that's where it's going. And I think sort of if there's a thesis to this whole debate that it's really not man versus machine, it's probably man plus machine that will win in online video. But have it up here.
Hi, my name is Cole. I used to write for a sort of internet culture meme blog called Erlesque, which is now defunct.
I miss it.
thank you. Oh. I wrote there for about a year and a half. And around the time that it shut down, I found myself becoming less and less useful to people, mostly due to the rise of communities like Reddit. And I found that as a curator, specifically the Reddit community, was becoming so good at curating content by the crowd. And I'm just wondering, from your perspective, as someone who sources Reddit quite often, and it only makes sense, do you think that like people like you and I are, like, what do we do to make ourselves useful on top of this like already very this community that's already very good at promoting viral content?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think about that a lot, and I think I've come to the conclusion that Reddit is almost becoming like a computer in a way. It has so many users submitting so much content that you really do reach a point, and I know a lot of Redditors do need some sort of filter on top of that to weed through just the amount of noise. And there's definitely, as that grows, I mean, there is a benefit to it, but I think even Redditors are now complaining to a certain extent about things that reach the front page, which they don't feel matches their personality or their identity, their online identity, and definitely is not what they're looking for when they log on to Reddit. So now they have to sift through subreddits to get to where they want to go. But even in those subreddits, there's infinite amount of content that, again, needs to be filtered. So two things. One, again, you need the filter on top of what you're already seeing. And also, people coming into Reddit may feel there's sort of a standoffish sort of attitude for people who are not well versed with the lingo and the jargon and aren't as familiar with the in jokes. And part of what I try to do is add context to that, because Reddit is sort of contextless in a lot of ways. It's just a headline which is not always very indicative of what you're about to experience, and then of the video or image or whatever it is, but there isn't a lot of context beyond that. You sort of leave that to people, so now you have to wade through the comments to find out what the truth is. So what I try to do is take all of that big pile, and try to condense it in a way where you show up, you get one piece of content, it delivers the context, and now you know everything you need to know. So if you want to go back to Reddit and join in on a larger conversation that's already taking place, now you have the tools to do that. And I see that, and I think of 4chan in the same way, where nobody who has been on 4chan can just show up to 4chan. They'll immediately be scared off. And that's part of what they love about it. They love keeping people out. But for me, the internet has to be a lot more inclusive than it is. I think Reddit and 4chan and some other smaller forums like MMO are trying to keep people away. And I think... Okay.
Hello.
And I think that, you know, reasonably you need someone to come in and tell you what everybody's talking about so that you can then join in on the conversation and feel like you know what's going on. That's what I feel I contribute.
I guess we're up front.
Oh, sure. I just want to ask, because a lot of the discussion was going around a lot of humorous videos or novelty videos, and I wanted to get your take on some things that are more socially centered or political. Of course, there's Kony, or there's the Don't Tase Me Bro, which kind of crosses over both. Especially because there, it's not just getting things that are funny. It's you potentially have things that it's gonna, shake a lot of shit up.
Yep. I'm gonna need another panel for Kony. That one really hit hard. I think that really could be. I mean, that's a whole day's worth of South by Southwest in terms of what Kony means to the internet as a whole, in terms of its impact, but also in terms of its spread, the way it got started, seemingly out of nowhere, managing to rack up 50 million views in a number of days, something that has never been seen. It caught the attention of pretty much everybody, from sort of lower tier curators up to The Guardian and The New York Times in a matter of days, and they never catch on to anything that's going on online until it's well past its prime. So for them to catch on to something, that really means something. But I think, there does have to be a balance between the two, and I hope that I strike a good balance where I try to keep people entertained, but using that to inform them as well. I know that I have a readership and they come in for certain things. They may come in for a cat video or some sort of funny fail video of some sort, but I want to be able to bring them in for that, but have them stick around for a more adult conversation about the internet blacklist bill and things like that I feel should be relevant to them, even if they don't know it yet. So again, it goes back to responsibility and being able to use that platform for social good and maximizing its potential.
All right, I think we have time for last question.
So. Hi, I'm Aaron. I work for Match.com, research scientist. I was wondering, if YouTube built something where in the site you could build your own remixes. You could take six different videos that you've seen, remix them together, replace the music and stuff like that. You were saying it's an indicator that something's going to go viral when you see a remake or a remix of it. If they made it more accessible, and you could say, well, these six guys, whenever they make a remix, I know all of these videos are going to do well, you'd be able to, I guess less of a question and more of a, hey, wouldn't this be cool?
I think they had that Wii Video tool. I just saw one that was, that whole Comedy Slam thing where they put, when they first published the results of that Comedy Slam of the, which video was better, it's basically hot or not for videos, the one that won, or was supposedly the most common, was a mashup created with this Wii Video tool, and it was supposed to be the best scares or something. I don't think it was really that good, but it won. I think the tool exists. Is that kind of what you're getting at? If you're saying just a tool that, so it's users just almost dumbly clicking and able to easily do it?
So yeah. I did have a question. I noticed that viral videos are generally really, really superficial. Like, there's very little going on. And do you think that's what makes them great, or do you think they're going to eventually grow into something where it's more of a story, or there's more conducive elements to it? Yeah, or you think it'll always stay something that's really superficial, like a laughing cat, or...
I think, going back to Coney taught us that's not accurate. It was a 27-minute video about social injustice, and millions of people sat through it, meaning it doesn't always have to be just a funny cat video or, you know, a person falling on their face. But in terms of what makes those videos successful is because they reach that primal thing in us that immediately makes it funny or shocking or sad or whatever, and we don't have to think about it. We just receive it and we immediately know why it's funny. We don't even necessarily can explain to ourselves why it's funny. We just watch it and know it's funny. Those will always, always be successful. The question is, how do you create a video like that? Thank you.
I'm skipping just to the end. Because we've reached that time, I want to thank you all for coming. I want to thank Neetsam for being on this panel. Seriously, I hope this was informative in some way. I'll be around after. I'm sure Neetsam will too. So thank you all. I appreciate it.